Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 7th of June. We're doing a special edition of All Things Political because I wasn't here yesterday, and so we wanted to do this because there is a whole lot going on today. Six primaries today, and actually a couple of those are caucuses. Yesterday, the Associated Press announced that Hillary Clinton had reached the number of delegates needed for the nomination because she had picked up commitments from superdelegates over the weekend. She would be the first woman, of course, to be the presidential nominee of a major party. Bernie Sanders said it is unfortunate that the media, in a rush to judgment, are ignoring the Democratic National Committee's clear statement that it is wrong to count the votes of superdelegates before they actually vote at the convention this summer. Could that reported delegate count suppress voter turnout today? We will find out as the votes are counted this evening. We'll be talking a little bit this hour about Donald Trump, but the whole second hour is devoted to Donald Trump. So this hour we will concentrate on Paul Ryan's comments, Donald Trump's attacks on a federal judge, citing his Mexican heritage, constituted the textbook definition of a racist comment. But Ryan said that he would continue to back him. It's absolutely unacceptable, he said, but I do think Hillary Clinton is. But do I think Hillary Clinton is the answer? No, I do not. Our guest this hour wrote a piece in the National Journal, many pieces, actually, but he highlights something that we'll talk about this hour. Clinton's next hurdle, Bernie or bust voters. Sanders supporters who identify themselves as independents appear reluctant to get behind the presumptive Democratic nominee. We'll be talking about that, how to convince Sanders supporters to join forces with the party to defeat Donald Trump. And he also wrote an interesting piece where these questions are asked: is Donald Trump reliable enough to be a president? And do I like Hillary Clinton enough to live with her for the next 4 years? Joining us this hour to talk about all of that and more is Adam Molnar. He's a staff correspondent for National Journal, primarily covering the presidential race. He covered politics as an intern for NPR and for the Center for Public Integrity, and he is a native Wisconsinite, graduated from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. So we're going to welcome phone calls for him. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we are on Twitter, and that's @KDunnShow. Adam, hello. Thanks very much for being with us.
Yes, thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, and another Wisconsin guy. We get many
of
them.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
It's great. Great to be talking to the great folks of Wisconsin.
Yeah. Well, it's good to have you with us. What did you think of the AP saying that Hillary Clinton did receive the required number of delegates? Is it fair, do you think, to take into account the superdelegates, or does Bernie Sanders have a point that the media is in a rush to judgment here?
So, yeah, it definitely caught everybody by surprise that the AP reported this the day before this big primary day. Everyone had sort of assumed that by the end of the night tonight, once all the polls had closed in New Jersey and California, that Hillary Clinton would kind of cross that 2383 threshold that she needs to clinch the Democratic nomination. But the AP has been surveying these superdelegates who are former party officials, maybe even current office holders, kind of the elite members of the party who are able to cast their ballot at the Democratic National Convention for whichever candidate they want, kind of regardless of the results. So they finally were able to get enough superdelegates who said that they were going to vote for Hillary Clinton to basically cross this threshold. And Bernie Sanders does have a point in saying that the superdelegates have not actually cast their votes yet.
Right.
They don't do that until the convention in July. But this is kind of the norm. This also happened 8 years ago because Barack Obama also needed superdelegates to cross the threshold. Media outlets called the Democratic race for him, even though the superdelegates hadn't voted yet at the convention. So really, you know, you can see where Bernie Sanders is coming from, but it's also fair to say that Hillary Clinton has clinched the nomination.
Mm-hmm. Which is a pretty big thing. It's another historic event, isn't it?
It is. It is. It's something that hasn't really been highlighted much over the past few weeks, or really even for much of the campaign, that she's now the first female nominee for a major party. It really is an historic moment. And, even the Clinton campaign was kind of taken aback by the AP's call. Hillary Clinton had an event last night in California, kind of downplayed the AP's decision. her campaign manager put out a statement saying, you know, this is, you know, we're kind of on the cusp of a historic moment, but we want to make sure that all six states that are voting today have their say. So I think we'll kind of hear her officially declare victory tonight after California, New Jersey, and all these other states vote.
And what about turnout today? Do you think that the announcement by the AP yesterday will suppress the turnout today?
I think it's possible. Because I think, you know, if there were some Hillary Clinton supporters, they might say, well, the race is over. Why should I even bother to go out and vote? At the same time, some Bernie Sanders supporters who may be upset with the decision, that could still drive them to the polls. So I think that you may see a slight decrease in turnout. But another thing that's interesting in a state like California is that a lot of the ballots are cast by mail. So there's probably already a good chunk of these that have already been sent in. So I don't think we'll see a huge drop off in the number of voters tonight.
Well, you've written about this. You have a huge number of Bernie Sanders supporters, lots and lots of young people in this country. And as you remind us, many of his Democratic Socialist backers don't have deep ties to the Democratic Party. So how does she, it would seem to me that she's going to have to convince those supporters to come to her side in order to defeat Donald Trump. How badly does she need them? How does she convince them?
Right. So if you look at some of the polling that was taken after Donald Trump became the presumptive nominee on the Republican side about a month ago, general election polling actually showed the race pretty close, and I think closer than a lot of people expected. The NBC Wall Street Journal poll, a very well-respected poll, had Hillary Clinton only up 3 points on Donald Trump. And if you kind of look at how it was broken down by party, a lot of Democrats are actually already united behind her. 83% said that they would vote for Hillary Clinton over Donald Trump, but only 66% of Bernie Sanders supporters were prepared to say that they are going to vote for Hillary Clinton. Now, that doesn't mean the other 34% are going to vote for Donald Trump. It just means that they're either undecided at this point or just don't even plan to vote in the general election. And what's interesting kind of about Bernie Sanders' coalition is that he's brought over a lot of liberal-leaning independents because, of course, Bernie Sanders wasn't even a member of the Democratic Party until last year. So a lot of independents who don't have deep ties to the Democratic Party, they flock to Bernie Sanders. They may not feel the same obligation to line up behind whoever the Democratic nominee is, in this case Hillary Clinton. And a lot of them are probably younger voters under the age of 30, maybe voting for the first time. Now, I think it's safe to assume many of them will come over to Clinton's corners. Or to Clinton's corner, it may take a few weeks, maybe even a few months. But Hillary Clinton is going to have to do some outreach to them if she wants to have them on her side for the general election.
And Adam, do you have any sense at all what Bernie Sanders is likely to say here? Is he going to make a forceful speech saying you simply must vote for Hillary Clinton and I endorse her wholeheartedly? Or is he carrying this to the convention in order to give some serious challenge to the superdelegates? Delegates into other issues to get important things in the platform. What is he likely to do here?
Well, if you know, if his comments after the AP's call last night are any indication, he's kind of planning to stick to his same message, and that is that he's going to stay in the race all the way through to the convention. He's kind of operating under this assumption that superdelegates haven't voted yet. He may be able to convince some to come over to his side, as unlikely as that may be. Now, he's going to, especially now that Hillary Clinton has clinched the nomination, according to the AP, he's going to face a lot more pressure from party leaders to drop out of the race and let Hillary Clinton focus all of her energy on Donald Trump. But he still seems determined to take this to the convention and hopefully try and get, you know, from his perspective, he wants to get some concessions maybe on the platform, try and push the party to the left on certain issues, and maybe even influence who the eventual vice presidential pick is.
Mm-hmm. And what about, I was reading over the weekend that the Boston Globe was reporting that Elizabeth Warren was being courted by Hillary Clinton. Is there truth in that?
So it's kind of unclear exactly who the Clinton campaign is courting and who they're not. I'm sure Elizabeth Warren is on their short list. She's a huge star on the left. A lot of Bernie Sanders supporters like her. I'm sure bringing her on the ticket would do a lot to kind of assure Sanders supporters that Hillary Clinton is kind of a true progressive. But one potential problem with picking Elizabeth Warren is if Hillary Clinton takes Elizabeth Warren out of the Senate and they get elected,
right,
it's up to the Republican governor there, Charlie Baker, to fill that seat, and at least until that there is a special election. And as Republicans and Democrats alike learned, that even in Massachusetts, a special election can produce surprising results when Scott Brown won there after John Kerry left his seat. So I don't know if Hillary Clinton or Democrats want to take a risk, especially when the control of the Senate is up for grabs. It could come down to just one or two seats this November. I don't know if they want to risk losing a seat, even if it is in a safe blue state like Massachusetts.
Yeah, interesting and valid point. When you talked about only 66% of Sanders voters would vote for Hillary Clinton, how many of those voters does she need in order to feel comfortable about beating Donald Trump?
So NBC did an interesting analysis on this, and as I had mentioned in their poll with, in conjunction with the Wall Street Journal, she had a 3-point lead on Donald Trump. So what they did was they took all of those, they took the voters who said that they would only vote for Bernie Sanders in a general election, wouldn't vote for Hillary Clinton. If she wins even 70% of those, her lead goes from 3 points to 8 points. So at this point, it's really kind of the difference of, is it going to be a really close neck-and-neck race between Clinton and Trump, but still probably a slight advantage to Clinton? Or does she open up a pretty sizable lead that would be tough for Trump to overcome by November?
Mm-hmm. You also wrote a piece, which was an interesting one, Peter Hart, the Democratic pollster, asking, is Donald Trump reliable enough to be president? And do I like Hillary Clinton enough to live with her for the next 4 years? It is amazing how their favorability ratings, both of them, are not very high at all. How did people answer that question?
Right. It is incredible, as you mentioned, to see these historically high unfavorability ratings for both Clinton and Trump. And the way Peter Hart phrased it, who, as you mentioned, Democratic pollster, helps conduct the NBC Wall Street Journal poll, he thinks that's going to be ultimately be a bigger issue for Hillary Clinton, even though Donald Trump also isn't all that likable as well. A bigger concern for him will be, is he reliable enough to actually carry out the day-to-day duties of the presidency? He's never held elected office before. People have questions about his temperament, how he would, you know, handle certain crises. So for Hillary Clinton, if she is able to kind of come across as even slightly more likable and people are comfortable enough with her in the Oval Office that they can just live with her on a day-to-day basis versus Donald Trump, who needs to actually convince people that he can be president, that is probably going to ultimately be a tougher hurdle for him to climb.
It appeared to me, I don't know if you have inside knowledge on this, I saw a little bit of her foreign policy speech last week, and she seemed to have, to me, a completely different tone. She was kind of mocking. She was a little more low-keyed, but very forceful. Did you see a different Hillary Clinton in that speech?
Absolutely. I think that was a speech that no one really saw coming. They framed it as a foreign policy speech, and she has certainly focused a lot of her attacks on Donald Trump in relation to foreign policy. But it was certainly a side and kind of a tone from Hillary Clinton that we haven't seen yet. And Democrats and Republicans alike, you know, kind of praised the speech and viewed it as an effective line of attack. So if she's able to keep up these sort of attacks and paint the contrast of, look, I have been a Secretary of State. I've served as a U.S. Senator. I was a First Lady in the White House. I kind of know what it takes to get things done and to bring change to Washington. Donald Trump doesn't have the temperament to serve as president, you know, wouldn't know kind of the first thing to do if he was elected. I think these are the types of attacks that can work out well for her in the long run.
Mm-hmm. And when it comes to superdelegates, Stephanie sent us an email. She says she was at the convention, Democratic convention in Green Bay over the weekend, and the vote to eliminate superdelegates was a non-binding vote. How will this be taken up? And maybe you think it won't be taken up at the Democratic National Convention.
Yeah, the debate over superdelegates, this comes up every 4 or every 8 years whenever the Democrats have a contested nominating fight. And 8 years ago, we saw some similar complaints actually from Hillary Clinton supporters about the role that superdelegates play. So this is something that often comes up. And as you mentioned at the top of the show, Wisconsin and several other states at their local conventions have passed these sort of resolutions trying to basically strip superdelegates of their power. Now, it's not going to do anything in terms of the results for the 2016 election. But if more states do this and if there's more input from local activists, especially at the convention, it is possible that there could be a change in future, whether it's the 2020 or the 2024 election. But it would still take a lot to, because this is really a key part of the democratic process for the party. And this sort of overhaul would really take both the Sanders supporters and kind of the Clinton wing working together on this. Still kind of remains to be seen how much both sides are going to push for this at the convention. The Sanders supporters certainly will. I'm not sure how willing the Clinton supporters will be to kind of take on this fight, at least right now.
We're going to continue and we'll move on to Paul Ryan's comments about Donald Trump's attacks on a federal judge citing his Mexican heritage. And he's being criticized as being racist, that the comments were racist. We'll hear Paul Ryan's response response to those and move into that conversation in just a moment. And we're welcoming your phone calls. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show. Twitter is at K Dunn Show. And our guest for all things political, this special Tuesday edition, is Adam Olner. He's staff correspondent for the National Journal, covers the presidential race, and we'll be with you momentarily here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We have a very interesting guest with us, Professor Robert Paxton. He's professor emeritus at Columbia University and one of the most prominent scholars of fascism. He specializes in the social and political history of modern Europe, particularly Vichy France during the World War II era. And he will talk to us about fascism, how we define fascism, and whether there are similarities and differences when it comes to Trump and Hitler, Trump and Mussolini. It should be an interesting conversation, hour two of our show. All right, let's go to some phone calls, and we start with Anne in Monona. Hi, Anne.
Hi. I wanted to say that I think people are ignoring, well, actually the press and media are ignoring, or they know very well, that when Hillary Clinton is elected, if she is, Bill Clinton is going to come along with her. Bill Clinton is a very strong personality. He's very corporate friendly. The huge corporations own most of the press and broadcast media, and try to control the ones they don't own. And if you like NAFTA and you liked the end of welfare for women with children, basically, and you liked all of Bill Clinton's corporate policies, you're just going to love seeing a Clinton in the White House again. And frankly, I think that the corporations that basically control the money flow in this country, that is the billionaires who control it, would like to see Hillary Clinton, because she has a record of being friendly to them. Donald Trump is so rich and so unpredictable that he can't be controlled, and that's what they don't like about him.
Adam.
Well, I think, at least to the first part of a listener's comment there, it speaks to kind of the mixed bag I think Bill Clinton is going to be for Hillary Clinton, and kind of has been already on the campaign trail. Certainly, he's been in public life for a very long time and brings a lot of baggage to the campaign trail among some liberals and also among some on the right. But at the same time, you know, he is a fundraising force, and he still is very popular among Democrats. It can really do a lot to fire people up, and is probably better on the stump than Hillary Clinton is. And then I think that also speaks to how you know, some liberals are just not going to be very comfortable with the Clintons. They're not, may not vote for Trump. Maybe they voted for Sanders in the primary, and Hillary Clinton's going to need to somehow assure these types of voters that she is one of them, essentially.
It would seem to me that Bill Clinton seems to be not as powerful a force on the campaign trail as he used to be. He seems to be tired.
Yes, well, you know, he certainly is getting up there in age, and he's been around the block a time or two. But I think he still is a powerful speaker, and I always just go back to the 2012 Democratic Convention when Bill Clinton delivered kind of the last speech before President Obama came on, and that still is I think one of the better political and just one of the more effective political speeches I've ever seen. So he maybe has lost some of his bite a little bit on the campaign trail, and even gets into scuffles as we've seen a few times with his opponents, but. He can still do a lot to bring Democrats together, I think, for the fall.
And thanks for your call. Dorothea in Hill Point. Hi.
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 Hi. I would just like to say that I find it very insulting that the media believes that women should vote for Hillary just because she's a woman and it's a historic event. We've seen what happened when everybody thought it was such a great idea to vote for Obama because it was a historic event. The only thing that I agree with your last caller, is bingo, nobody controls Trump. Hello?
Yes, go ahead. Adam, your response?
Yes, no, I think that is certainly what draws a lot of people to Donald Trump is this idea that, you know, as he said throughout the primary, he was able to put a lot of his own money into his campaign. Didn't have to go out and reach out to donors and actively fundraise, and he was kind of able to paint himself as, you know, he's his own individual and he's not controlled by anyone else. But at the same time, now that he is the nominee, he needs to help his party raise money. And we've seen the campaign form a joint fundraising committee with the RNC. They're beginning to do the outreach of reaching out to big donors in order to fund this campaign, because Trump not only needs to think about raising money for his campaign, but he needs to help his down-ballot candidates in Senate and House and gubernatorial races all around the country.
And thanks very much for the call. We want to move into Paul Ryan's comments about Donald Trump. Paul Ryan had some harsh words for Donald Trump this morning. He was criticizing him for what he called racist comments about the federal judge. But he also said that Trump is still the better choice over Hillary Clinton and could move Republican policies forward if elected to the White House. Let's hear what he said and then get a response to it. This is Paul Ryan.
Claiming a person can't do their job because of their race is sort of like the textbook definition of a racist comment. I think that should be absolutely disavowed. It's absolutely unacceptable. But do I believe that Hillary Clinton is the answer? No, I do not. Do I believe that Hillary Clinton is going to be the answer to solving these problems? I do not. I believe that we have more common ground on the policy issues of the day, and we have more likelihood of getting our policies enacted with him than we do with her. But I do absolutely disavow those comments. I think they're wrong. I don't think they're right-headed, and the thinking behind it is something I don't even personally relate to. But at the end of the day, this is about ideas. This is about moving our agenda forward, and that's why we're moving the way we're moving.
He was asked by a reporter how he can support Trump in spite of his textbook racist comments. Ryan said, "I don't know what's in his heart, but I think that comment itself is defined that way." So, take it, Adam.
Right.
What do you make of this?
Paul Ryan's going to have to get used to fielding a lot of these questions over the next 5 months or so. And I think one thing that's going to be interesting to see, we've seen a lot, although certainly not all, of the sort of top Republican officials come out and endorse Donald Trump since he became the presumptive Republican nominee, even if they were skeptical of him at first and maybe don't agree with him on every issue. But what are they actually going to do to help get him elected? You know, Paul Ryan has now said that he will vote for Donald Trump. He's endorsing him. But is he going to actively fundraise for him? Is he going to go out on the campaign trail for him? I would imagine Paul Ryan's not going to want to appear side by side with Donald Trump. So it'll be interesting to see as more Republicans come around to the idea of Trump, especially when they're presented of the option between him and Hillary Clinton. They may say that they endorse him, but what do they actually do to back that up?
Mm-hmm. And when Ryan talks about the policies moving forward, that Trump would be better on that, are there certain policies that both of those gentlemen can agree on and that would be moved forward in a Trump presidency?
You know, it actually is kind of tough to find common ground between these two. You know, certainly trade, you know, which is a big issue for both of them. They are on the opposite sides of that. You could see something potentially with tax cuts. You know, Donald Trump has certainly spoken in favor of tax cuts. Paul Ryan would like to see that. But it really is kind of stunning to see the lack of common ground between the presumptive Republican nominee and the top-ranking elected Republican official, the Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan. So, it's going to be really interesting to see how they interact on that. And every time Donald Trump points out a new policy position on the campaign trail, Paul Ryan's going to be immediately asked, do you agree with this? So he's going to have to do a lot of these types of press conferences up until November.
Dave in Menominee, hi.
Hi, thank you. I wanted to make comment also about the racist remarks of Donald Trump. You know, the Republicans are working really hard to separate Trump's mind and his heart from his mouth. And they're going to be defending his mouth and somehow dividing his body up somehow, that his mouth has nothing to do with what's in his mind or his heart, and which is hard to believe that we're going to fall for anything like that. And I think what we're going to have to deal with is trying to Republicans are going to vote for this guy whether he's a racist or not, and they're going to defend him, and they don't care whether he's racist. They're going to do everything they can to try to make them win, because all they care about is, like Grover Norquist had brought up, they just need somebody with a right arm or a left arm, a hand that can sign whatever they bring to them. They don't care if he's a vegetable or a stump.
I wonder if a lot of Republicans are not going to vote for him, Adam.
I think that certainly is possible. It actually was kind of surprising to see in some of the polls that came out over the past few weeks, some of the national polls, how many Republicans were already willing to say that they would support Donald Trump as the nominee. Now, that could change over time. If Trump continues to make these sorts of comments, he could continue to lose support throughout the summer and into the fall. But I think as long as he has that R next to his name, you know, Republicans are going to say, look, you know, Donald Trump, he may not be the best option, but if we want to keep this party united, if we want to make sure that we hold on to the Senate, that we hold on to our House seats, that we continue to win in gubernatorial and state House elections around the country, that our best bet is to be united. And, you know, Donald Trump's going to have to be a part of that, even if they disagree with what he says or what he thinks at times.
He really is masterful. I've been following the press talking about the U.S. District Court Judge Gonzalo Curiel in San Diego accusing him, of course, he was, of ruling unfairly in a civil case against Trump concerning Trump University because he is a Mexican, and how little of the coverage, actually. I know this has been brought up peripherally in the months previous to now about Trump University, but there are, you know, where is the coverage on Trump University here, too? It's all about this judge because he made it this headline because of what he said, and it takes away all the focus away from Trump University.
Exactly. Yeah, Donald Trump has proven to be a master in sort of molding the way the media thinks about these issues, oftentimes his advantage. I don't know if this is necessarily to his advantage, his comments about the judge, that they've still been in the news cycle for this long. But I do think the Trump University issue will still continue to come up, whether it's in the press or if it's from Hillary Clinton and her Democratic allies. I think a lot of these, you know, if they're able to get some of these former students of Trump University who have said they had a very bad experience there and kind of felt that they were scammed, that's something that could make a very effective attack ad to be airing on television. Almost a Mitt Romney-style attack, trying to paint him as this sort of out-of-touch, wealthy businessman who doesn't care about the average voter.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Dave, for your call. We go to Marty in Douglas County. Hi, Marty.
Hi, good afternoon. I have kind of a really boring, wonky numbers question, which I will ask, but I would really like to comment on your first caller. I just thought that was an incredibly sexist thing to say, to think that Hillary Clinton has gotten this far without making her own decisions. I think it's pretty unbelievable. Perhaps, yes, she will be consulting her husband on some issues, but to think that she's going to go, okay, Bill, what should I do here? That's ridiculous. So here's my boring question. How many superdelegates are there, and how many are voting for Clinton? How many are voting for Sanders? I wonder if you know that. I have heard Bernie Sanders say that at the convention, a lot of these superdelegates could be changing their mind. And as far as I know, only one has changed his or her mind, and they've gone from voting for Sanders to voting for Clinton.
Right. Well, you're putting me on the spot here. I don't have the exact number of superdelegates in front of me, but I know it ranges into the hundreds, because in all 50 states, they usually have several of them. And I think it roughly makes up about a fourth of the total delegates that are at stake. And you're right. Most of the superdelegates are backing Hillary Clinton, and very few have switched. And in fact, it was just the one who has switched from Clinton to Sanders since the beginning of the primary season. And that's not really a huge surprise, given that these superdelegates are the party elites, party officials who are more likely to support an establishment figure like Hillary Clinton. And it would really be, you know, a totally historic moment if somehow Sanders was able to convince a huge chunk of superdelegates to switch from Hillary Clinton to him, especially when Hillary Clinton has more votes overall than Bernie Sanders, and she has more pledged delegates than Bernie Sanders. So really, in a lot of ways, he's actually asking superdelegates, the very superdelegates he's railing against, to sort of overturn the will of the people in this case.
Well, except that, you know, I don't fully understand this. If you're from a state where Bernie Sanders won overwhelmingly, and you've got way over a majority of the superdelegates voting for Hillary Clinton, how can that be? That's not quite fair, is it?
That is true. There have been certain states where, even if Bernie Sanders won by a pretty wide margin, the way the delegates are allocated, they're allocated proportionally. So even if Hillary Clinton only gets, say, 30% of the vote in a state, she still walks away with a few delegates. And then the superdelegates in that state could still back her no matter what. That is certainly a process that a lot of Democrats are not happy with. But I think, you know, looking, you can take these individual state-by-state cases and kind of make that point. But I also think that overall, if you just look at the national map here, that the superdelegates are basically voting with the way that the voters are.
And Marty, Scotty looked this up. The superdelegate counts now. Superdelegates can support any candidate. The AP reports that Clinton has 571 superdelegates. Sanders has 48. There are a number of them. Marty's gone. There are a number of them in California, I'm sure, too. So maybe Scotty can look up California. Thank you, Scotty, very much. That's a lot of superdelegates she has.
Yes.
And not
yes,
very many he has, yeah. Thanks, Marty, very much for your call. Let's go to Brad next in Jefferson. Hi, Brad.
Hi. The money is in control. And that the one lady called up, she talked about Bill Clinton doing NAFTA and welfare reform and a bunch of other things, and how the corporations are in control and the billionaires are who control the corporations. Now, these are very important issues, and you didn't really even touch upon that, the guest, and he kind of turned it around and talked about getting people to vote for Hillary. And Kathleen, you just kind of let it go. Now, is this not an important issue that we are not in control, that the money's in control?
So, yeah, I certainly, you know, this is something that Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders, a lot of their supporters feel that, and this is, they've been feeling this for a while, that they have no say in the political system. They have that, you know, whether it's in business or in politics, only a very few get to control the outcome. And that's been an effective message for both Donald Trump and for Bernie Sanders. And I think in Hillary Clinton, we'll certainly need to address that concern. I think she sort of has during the primary. She's moved left on a number of issues, including trade. And she's going to need to continue to do that if she wants Bernie Sanders supporters in her corner.
And in our own defense, Brad, we've done show after show after show after show on all of those issues. So it's been front and center, believe you me. We've talked about them. Thanks for the call. Tom in Appleton, hi.
Yeah, I'd just like to respond to not the last woman that called, but maybe two or three before that, with what I regard as truly inane comments suggesting that the only reason anybody would vote for Hillary is because it would be the first woman president. She equated that with all of us that voted for Obama did so only because he would be the first black man as president. It just doesn't add up, and it's insulting to think that that's this person's view of how many of us make our voting decisions.
So you're supporting her, Tom, I assume, for what reasons?
Well, I'm a Bernie guy, but, you know, there's no shame in voting for the lesser of two evils. In fact, that's the only reasonable thing to do. And Hillary, yeah, she's kind of tied in with Wall Street, but she's also been a very liberal senator, and I think she would probably be a very good president. She would probably be the most qualified in her first day in office president that we've ever had in terms of her background. I think there's a lot of good there.
All right. Thank you, Tom.
You bet.
No, thanks. Our number is 800-486-8655. We're doing a Tuesday All Things Political today with Adam Woolner. He is a staff correspondent for National Journal. He covers the presidential race and covered politics before this for National Public Radio and the Center for Public Integrity. We have a couple lines open if you've been trying to get through. Now would be a good time for you to give us a ring. Gary in Merrill is next. Hi, Gary.
Yes, hello. Well, if I could say a few words for Trump, the federal judge that's going to rule on his case is belongs to a legal organization that affiliates itself with La Raza, and La Raza has been blocking Trump rallies. They've been throwing bricks, beating up people, and they're very, very much against the things that future President Trump has been talking about. So I think the judge should have taken himself off the case already.
And what about Muslim judges? Do you think that they should all be taken off cases?
If there is a Muslim as the same as a Christian that would find himself at very different odds with a legal case, yes, why not? The blacks, a lot of people now are calling for whites to be taken off in police departments, white judges replaced with black judges. it happens all the time, but it never happens where a white person can say the same thing. It's always on the side of minorities.
Adam.
Right, so you know clearly, you know, race has become a big part of this campaign, and as long as Donald Trump continues to make these sort of comments, I think it it still will be. Clearly, this is an issue that fires up his core supporters,
right.
But it's also one that is going to make it really difficult for him to expand his base with voters that he really is going to need to win in a general election, whether it's independents or wealthy, more educated women. These are the types of groups Hispanics, minorities. These are the groups he needs if he wants to sort of build off of his base from the primary. And comments like these that he's been making over the past week and really throughout the whole primary season aren't going to help him do that.
So what do you think his thoughts are about this? Does he not care? Does he think it's just going to motivate his base? He obviously isn't going to get a whole lot of new, I wouldn't think, Hispanic voters as a result of these kind of comments. So what's in it for him?
No, well, you know, I think it's interesting that Donald Trump certainly does not have a traditional campaign around him. He has a small circle of advisors, but Donald Trump is really the one running the show, and he's just sort of doing what he thinks is best. There doesn't seem to be one single coherent strategy guiding what he's doing. His best bet is to have basically a record turnout among the white sort of blue-collar working-class voters that really propelled him during the primary to get him over the hump in the general election. But the problem for him is those types of voters are making up a smaller and smaller share of the electorate in a general election, every year, now going back for a few years, while some, more educated, college-educated voters, minorities, women are making up a larger chunk of the electorate. These are the groups he needs to try and make inroads with, but for now, he's writing them off, and it's a pretty risky bet.
Let's go next to Gloria in Madison. Hi, Gloria.
Hi. I've been reading a book by David Axelrod, kind of his life, and then he goes through the first Obama campaign. And there's some interesting points he makes. One is that he says that it's been fairly common that when you have, 8 years of, someone who is president, that the next election is a change election. And no matter how many... how much they may like that president or whatever, the electorate wants change. And when Obama ran, that's what he ran on, was change. And that could explain a lot of the Bernie and Trump momentum. And when Hillary ran against Obama, she ran as the stable candidate, with all kinds of experience, which is what she's doing again. And it could be a bad way to be running because... the electorate may not want that, may not want her experience and stability and all that because she's now running after somebody has been in for 8 years. So I thought that was interesting. And then the one other thing that I thought was interesting is at the end of the first Obama campaign, he was in the Hillary position where he had more delegates and more everything, and she was challenging him, and she did exactly what they're complaining about Bernie. She was trying to turn those superdelegates in her direction. So it kind of seems like, it's the position you're in, what you say is fair, and not fair. So I'd just like comments on that, if the guest has heard these sorts of things or if this
okay.
Real common.
And she didn't, Adam, if my memory serves me well, she didn't take it all the way to the convention, did she? Didn't she give support to Obama shortly after, a couple days from now, 8 years ago?
That's right. So she actually, it was 8 years ago to the day that Hillary Clinton ended her campaign and endorsed Obama and gave her very now famous 18 million cracks in the glass ceiling speech. And so that actually came 4 days after the final primary day. So the primary in 2008 ended on June 3rd, this time around it's ending on June 7th. So it did take her a couple days to get around to endorsing Obama, but she ultimately did it and didn't stay in through the convention. Now, Bernie Sanders could still change his mind in the next few days. Maybe he'll follow a similar path, but everything we're hearing from the Sanders campaign is that he still intends to take this all the way to the convention in July.
You're listening to a Tuesday edition of All Things Political. Adam Woolner is our guest this hour, staff correspondent for National Journal. He covers the presidential race, and we're welcoming your phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655. The email talk at WPR.org. Our Facebook page, where we'd love to read your comments about politics and everything else, is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And we're on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go back to phone calls. Nate in Friendship. Hi, Nate.
Hello, how are you today?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing well.
Good.
I have a question for your guest. What does he think would be, or does he believe that Kennedy and Eisenhower might have a little trouble recognizing their respective parties today?
I think that that's probably true. You know, it's been a little while since they have, of course, serving as president. So both parties have evolved greatly over time. And I think, you know, even the Democratic and Republican parties have changed a lot over the past 10 years. You know, just looking at what Bernie Sanders has been able to do in the primary, really pushing his party to the left on a lot of economic and social issues, while the Republican Party has certainly drifted more to the right on both of those issues. And so it's kind of left this, you know, some people have, there's been a lot of talk about a third party candidate, whether there's someone that kind of can run up the middle. I don't know if we quite have those conditions just yet, but I do think both parties are kind of moving in their respective directions, you know, Republicans to the right and Democrats to the left.
Mike is next in Barron. Hi, Mike.
Hey, good afternoon. I'm wondering if your guest could talk a little bit about the idea that these are party primaries. These are the party's attempt to put forth a candidate. And for Bernie Sanders, he's kind of a Johnny-come-lately candidate. He didn't have a lot of Democratic Party support beforehand. He's generating a lot of public interest. But from a party perspective, he's not a candidate that has a lot of history, a lot of machinery that will come to play. And that's part of the reason why the superdelegates aren't supporting him.
I think you're absolutely right, Adam.
Yeah, that's exactly right. He didn't really become a member of the party until in early 2015, just before he launched his presidential bid. And in fact, there was some argument among his advisors whether or not he should run as a Democrat or not. Bernie Sanders initially actually wanted to run as an independent. Some of his advisors convinced him that running as a Democrat is the best bet. And this was really evident during the primaries. So 27 states had these exit polls of voters as they were leaving the polls. And in 27 of these states, In 24, Bernie Sanders won self-identified independents, but among self-identified Democrats, Hillary Clinton won 24 of the 27 states. So you saw this divide where Hillary Clinton, a lifelong or at least a long-time member of the Democratic Party versus someone who's really only been a member for a little bit over a year now. Hillary Clinton was able to rely on these sort of dedicated Democratic activists, while Bernie Sanders won over the self-identified independents.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Mike, for your call. Josh in Milwaukee. Hello.
Hi. Just wanted to talk a little bit about the idea that Donald Trump's biggest fear in his life probably is that people stop talking about him. And every time that he calls into a TV talk show and they put him on the air, it's enabling someone who's pretty much an addict. Why don't people realize that just by hanging up the phone when he calls to be on the show, that's the best thing you could possibly do to stop him from controlling every message that he puts out?
People sure don't hang up the phone, do they, Adam?
That's right. They want the ratings, you know, right. Cable nets, you know, radio shows. Everybody wants the ratings, and they want to hear what Donald Trump is going to say next. But this has been the strategy for Trump all the way through the primaries. He didn't run a lot of traditional, you know, TV, radio, even online ads all that much. He really banked on free media airtime, whether it was calling into shows, you know, appearing on set to do interviews. He was, you know, all over the TV, way more than any of his rivals. Now, it could be a little bit tougher for him to pull off in a general election when it's kind of a one-on-one battle. But still, I think we're going to be seeing and hearing a lot more of Trump than we will of Hillary Clinton over the next 5 months. So Hillary Clinton needs to figure out maybe that's the best strategy, that Trump can kind of talk him out of this. But Hillary Clinton needs to make sure she's getting her message out there as well.
Well, the free advertising, somebody said that it was worth $2 billion in the primary. He was on TV
Absolutely. All
the time.
Right, yeah, it was really kind of unprecedented how much free media Donald Trump got during the primary.
Thanks, Josh, for your call. Craig in Sturgeon Bay, hello.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
my question is there any way of estimating how large the crossover might be from Republicans to Democrats in the upcoming election for president, and what demographic does that represent?
So right now, the way the polls are shaping up, it doesn't look like there's going to be a lot of crossover. Maybe sort of your usual, you know, in a usual kind of election, it's usually between maybe 8 or 10% of Republicans who cross over and vote for the Democrat, and vice versa. And I don't anticipate with Donald Trump, who is loathed by so many on the left, and Hillary Clinton, who is loathed by so many on the right, I don't see them getting a lot of crossover votes. Hillary Clinton may have more of an opportunity just because there may be some center-right Republicans. Maybe they care a lot about foreign policy, don't trust Donald Trump on that issue. They may go to Hillary Clinton. But I don't think it's really going to ultimately be that big of a number.
Yeah, I have one other question.
Sure.
So far, what we have are the primaries, and yet it's a tiny fraction of the electorate. Why is it that we are so convinced that that indicates what's going to happen in the presidential election? And for that matter, why did all of the Republican candidates drop out based purely on these primary statistics?
Well, you know, they had to drop out just because the delegate math was working against them. And you are right that a primary electorate looks much different from a general election electorate. You know, whether it's the Republican side or the Democratic side, it's usually the most tuned in voters, the most kind of dedicated political activists who are very committed to their party, and so they'll come out and vote. But you know, we saw, you know, Ted Cruz, John Kasich, they stayed in for probably about as long as they could have, but just eventually it was the math was insurmountable, and there was no way they were going to be able to get enough delegates or at least prevent Trump from getting the number of delegates he needed to wrap up the nomination.
Thanks, Craig, for your call. Jerry in Stockbridge, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, earlier you had a guest that a caller that referenced Axelrod's book and him saying that usually there's a regime change, a party change every 8-year cycle in the presidentials, but that's really very inaccurate. We've had many one-term presidents. We even had one president that won 6 consecutive elections, FDR. So there's no diehard rule. And I wouldn't count on just math, you know, just counting chances, especially in this election. This is breaking a lot of norms, or what we believed were norms.
Yeah, it sure is. Thank you. Thanks, Jerry. Adam?
Yeah, absolutely. You might think if this was a normal election year that the party that was out of power would have maybe a slight advantage just after 8 years of President Obama. And recently we've actually started to see Obama's approval rating start to tick up for the past few weeks. But for a while there, he was underwater. And you think that if it was kind of a normal year and he had kind of an average Republican against an average Democrat, that you might give a slight edge to the Republicans. But with Donald Trump as the Republican nominee, as we've seen ever since he got into the race, all of the normal rules of politics have sort of been thrown out the window.
And we go to Josie in Sheboygan. Hi.
Hi. I had a lot of comments, but I guess there's only not much time. But I wanted to say that what really bothers me, or one of the things that really bothers me, is that Hillary Clinton will not reveal what she said in those speeches to those big, you know, money people. And I think that says a lot. You know, it doesn't make sense. It's illogical if she didn't say anything detrimental to the general public, when she would be glad to say, you know, reveal everything she said.
Yeah, I think that's going to be an issue for Hillary Clinton. Maybe not the speeches on their own, but it feeds into this narrative that Republicans will be trying to push out there over the next few months, is that Hillary Clinton isn't trustworthy. And we've kind of seen that play out in the polls. More than 60% of Americans would not say that Hillary Clinton is honest or trustworthy. So she's going to have to try and overcome that gap. Now, from Hillary Clinton's perspective, she's lucky because Donald Trump is also not viewed as very honest or trustworthy. So this is going to be an issue that's going to come up for both candidates heading into November.
About a minute left. Robin in Madison. Hi.
Hi. I'm a Bernie Sanders supporter, and I just want to mention that my concern about everybody going pro-Hillary today before the big Tuesday here that we're waiting for the results is the fact that I'm concerned about whether Hillary can go up against Trump, because she's got so much dirt and so much baggage. And, you know, it's all going to come up. Trump brings out the worst in people, and she's going to have, I don't really think she really knows what she's in for, you know.
As a Bernie supporter, what are you going to do, Robin? Do you know?
Well, she hasn't convinced me yet. You know, I don't like what she did. I don't like her her hawkishness. I don't really like too much about her. And so I'm not really sure what I'm going to do unless Bernie tells me to vote for her. I probably won't. I'll probably vote for the Green Party because I really feel like your show today has been pro-Hillary. I feel like NPR in general is pro-Hillary. We've talked about Trump like 45 minutes of this hour, which is, you know, playing into the narrative, let's talk about Trump. I mean, nobody talks about Bernie, you know, and it's just like I think people are afraid of change, and I think the Democratic platform needs to change, and even if he isn't voted in by the superdelegates, because they all made their decision before he even ran, I hope that he goes all the way to the convention and changes this party, because it doesn't work.
All right, thanks, Robin. We have done many, many shows on Bernie Sanders, so we got to be fair about this. Adam, thank you very much for being with us this hour. Appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on.
Our guest this hour, Adam Wollner, staff correspondent for National Journal, covers presidential race, and he covered politics when he worked for NPR and the Center for Public Integrity. Thanks to Scotty Myers for producing the hour, and to Scotty as well for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. We have news coming up from National Public Radio. Hour number two, we will be talking about fascism.